This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org.
10 Radio.
Good morning, 10 Radio listeners. What a fabulous day, and welcome to the May edition of Farming Life. This month we're going to talk about machinery, and I'm choosing this month because on our farm we'll be making silage and we get contractors in to help us. So without farm machinery, without contractors, and without people who service this machinery, we couldn't farm at all. So this morning I'm joined by Lester Maddock, who is a long-time contractor, and most of you in the area might well know him. And I'm also joined by Bill Burge, who is my personal, well, not my personal, but he's the farm mechanic and deals with all our tractors and machinery. But we're going to start off with Lester. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in, Lester. Welcome. And perhaps we can start with your story, and we'll start with, well, why did you start contracting?
Good afternoon. I left school in 1945 and started work on a farm driving horses and doing general farm work. Then I went on to driving a tractor. After I'd been there a few years, I wanted to earn some money. Well, I didn't earn much money when I was living. I lived in on the farm, and I had my meals there and slept there, and I had 16 shillings a week.
16?
And I was paid once a year. So I couldn't get rid of much money. Anyway, after I'd been there about six years, I decided I wanted to earn a bit more money, and I went rabbit trapping in the winter. And it was a dirty, filthy job, but it was good money. And I was catching round about 100 rabbits a night, and I was getting 9 pence a rabbit. And when I caught one farm, moved on to the next.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all a means to an end. I wanted to start farming when I was a bit older, and me 16 shillings a week wasn't going to let me do it.
No, so?
So... and I also bought a little tractor, a little grey Fergie, helped
was that
me
the
on
the T20
rabbit
you were talking about? The T20?
T20. Yeah. And then also with that tractor I did a bit of ploughing and a bit of contracting work, and that was how it started. Besides doing this bit of ploughing, I took up spreading Bassick slag.
Right.
Which was a filthy job that was. I spread it for various farmers, and they paid me so much an acre for doing it. Came in paper bags, 100 weights then, but previously Bassick slag had been in 200 weights. Thank goodness I didn't have to deal with any of them.
Oh, right. Yes, no, that's a lot to cut. Can you explain to the listeners, Lester, what exactly Bassick slag what was used for?
Well, Bassick slag was phosphate, really. It was
right.
A fertiliser.
Yeah.
And it was a offshoot of steel manufacturing.
Steel industry, yeah.
And, a lot of farmers... It were getting subsidy from the government, but some of that money had to be spent on either lime or Bassick slag. So a lot of them wanted Bassick slag, and that made work for me.
Yeah, that meant that made good work for someone contracting.
That's
yes.
right.
Yeah.
Well, as time went on and I'd got a bit of money together, in 1952, Frances, my wife, we got married in 1952.
Yeah.
And we came to Wibbliscombe in September 1952, and started farming. We got the tenancy of Colt Farm, and we were farming beef and sheep, which some we call dog and stick farming.
Right, yes, yes, yes.
And but it didn't occupy all my time, so I was glad to use me little Fergie for a bit of contract work. Hay baling was just coming into focus then, and I had, but my Fergie wasn't quite man enough for that, so I had a 135, and we did, well, we were going all round the parishes doing hay baling, plenty of work, and it progressed from that. Then I had two balers at one time. I had a lad working for me, mm-hmm. and he's worked for me off and on for 40 years. He's still with me today.
Oh, bless.
After hay baling, of course, we were doing ploughing and various other work. And I'm getting stuck here. Wait a minute.
Okay, right, Lester, bless you.
TVO, which is more or less the same as diesel, I see that I had 200 gallon come to was £14, which works out at 0.15 pence a litre.
Yeah.
Today, yeah. It's 68 pence a litre.
Yeah, I know. I mean, will come to the size of the contracting, the machinery you have to run, and the price of the diesel. But if I could go back to silage making, which is what I'm interested in, because that's obviously what's happening on the farm, my farm at the moment. How did you start silage making?
Well,
perhaps you could tell the listeners. I know that's what. Who invented silage? Because you talked about hay. Who invented silage, and what is silage exactly? And you know, why did you get into silage?
Well, I'm not too sure who invented silage, but I think I picked it up somewhere that the Romans made silage when they were here. But of course, it would have been laborious job. They didn't have the machinery we've got today, and really silage didn't take off till in the 1950s,
yeah.
And that was mainly with a little grey Fergie and a buck rake. Silage is grass put in a heap or in a pit,
yeah.
And weighted down and covered up, and that ferments and it makes good animal feed, and there isn't the risk that there is with hay, because with hay, if you have any rain on it, you tend to spoil it.
Yeah.
But with silage, you can even do it when it's raining, but it's better not to.
Right.
And you're pretty sure you feed for the winter with silage.
Yeah.
But as the machinery improved and got better and bigger, silage making has overtaken hay completely. Very little hay is made now, but we used to do about 10 acres a day with the
old
buck rake,
yeah.
After it'd been mown, but nowadays, well, anything up to 100 acres a day.
Yeah.
We probably will be doing 100 acres today.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And we were talking and you said something about you could go out and make 40 acres of silage after tea, Lester.
Yes.
Compared to the old days, you say a whole day to make a crop. That's fantastic. Now, we were talking and you feel very strongly about the rate of wrapping. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Well, besides putting silage in a pit or in a heap, we can bale it, round bales and big square, and then they're either tied up with string or with a special net, round bales. Then they have to be covered with plastic. You can get the plastic all sorts of colours. Well, green, white, black mainly. No doubt you people have seen them about the fields, these black, and they're black bales of silage. When we started doing it, we were putting on four thicknesses of black plastic, but there was quite a bit of spoilage. It wasn't thick enough wrap on the bales. Now, on our contracting business, I'm the only one that does the wrapping.
Right.
And I will insist that I have put on six thicknesses.
Right.
We've lost customers owing to it because it made it expensive,
yeah.
But I won't do it less.
Right.
We've lost customers, but they've come back to us afterwards because
yes.
Four thicknesses aren't enough.
Because, right, from my experience, if I've had a bale that's not been wrapped properly with this horrible plastic, it goes mouldy. And
it.
You can open up a bale
yeah.
and it's not been protected.
That's
and
right.
You've wasted a whole bale of winter feed.
That's true.
Plus, I must add, that with this netting, if that's not put on properly,
yes.
You take the plastic off, you take the bale to the trough, to feed the animals, and you're going across the yard and the whole thing falls apart in the yard. Ah, drives me nuts. Same with string. If the string isn't put on properly, you open up the plastic and the whole thing collapses. Ah, right, so good on you, Lester.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you say, people have found out the hard way
yes.
and come back to you. That's
yes.
good.
Yes, it has to be done properly because although it seems expensive at the time to be putting on six thicknesses of wrap, if you spoil the bale, well, that's
exactly.
20 quid down the drain.
Yeah.
So
you had a story about a college lad. Will you tell, I think the listeners will enjoy this story, about the college lad and his computer?
Yes, well, we do get new drivers come along all the time. And this lad came along and he knew how to bale the silage. He'd done it before. In the balers these days, there's a little computer which you just adjust to put on various thicknesses of the net which holds the bale together. Oh, he knew all about that. Well, I sent him up on the Brendan's lovely level field to go bale. When I arrived to start wrapping about an hour later, broken bales all over the field.
Oh,
and,
dear.
And broken bales, round bales, you've got to roll them all out again
yeah.
all and re-bale them, and it's very hard and
tedious,
a miserable job.
Yeah.
And, this lad was college-trained. And, well, when I did actually catch him up, he was down bottom of the field using his mobile phone. And anyway, he didn't last very long with us, I'll tell you.
Because
I found another college-trained lad. We won't mention no names. I sent him. This was the harvest time. I sent him out to stack some big square straw bales that had been baled. Well, we stack them up so they won't get rain on them. He went out in this field. It was about 7 miles away. We went out a couple of days later to carry the bales. It had rained in the meanwhile. When we got out there, he'd have stacked them too high.
Instead of
he should have put them five high.
Yeah.
Common sense.
Yeah.
And we do find that the local lads from the village schools or farmers' sons, they've got much more common sense than a lot of these so-called highly trained lads.
Yeah.
It can be very annoying.
Yes, I can imagine. And thank you for that perspective. But what shall we move on then to... Right, after silage making, what's your calendar? Because I'm aware of some of the activities, but I think after silage making...
Well, I would like to say that our silage making, because we're here in Wiveliscombe, down here in Wiveliscombe in the Taunton Vale... we can start silage making in May, as we are now, which is early this year.
Yeah.
And we work up the hill to the top of the Brendan's, and we can still be doing grass silage in September.
Ah, right.
And, which prolongs the use of the forage harvesters.
Right.
Because the forage harvesters today are machines that cost, about $2,500.
Quarter of a million?
No, not that. I'm wrong there. 250.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, and they do need a long period of work to really make it viable.
To earn their keep, yes. Yeah.
And so then when we finish the silage, it's harvest time.
Right.
Because we're still silage making in August and September. And harvest comes along. And there again, we started, well, I can go back harvest time, cutting corn with a reaper and horses. I led the horse.
Yeah.
I was only 10. And it was the reaper, sheep. Somebody rode on the reaper and put it out in sheaves. It was like a mowing machine with a rack on. And when you push out a sheave of corn, and then it had to be tied behind. And if we caught up the tires, we were tying the sheaves, Muggins had to tie some. So I know what it is to tie corn.
That's harvesting by hand.
That was by hand, And if you'd done a couple of acres a day.
You knew about it.
Yeah, that's right. And back then there wasn't any sprays, and most of the time you got a lot of thistles. And you were trying to tie up this corn, bundles of corn full of thistles. But anyway, we moved on from there, and then it was the reaper, the binder. But a lot of the fields where I was too then were steep fields, and the binder was too big a machine to operate there. And then we come on to combine harvesters. The first combine we had was a 6-foot cut.
Right.
Little Massey.
Can you explain to the listeners, the non-farming listeners, about what what a 6-foot cut means exactly?
Well, it cuts 6 foot. It cuts 6 foot wide of corn at a time, and that goes back over on a platform, moves up into a thrashing drum, which whips around, knocks all the grain off
into a hopper,
and the grain goes. Back then, it had to be bagged off on the combine,
right? Yeah.
But the and the straw out the back, and no cabs, dust galore. if it was fine weather, you could only do it when it was fine weather anyway.
Yeah.
And but then we started with a 6-foot cut. I had that one in partners with my brother. We lived 13 miles apart, so that didn't work out too well. And so we moved on. The next one was a 8-foot cut. That was a Dania, a lovely combine, but not really fast enough.
No,
he made a good job, but he was so slow. And then we 12 foot with the next combine, Massey again, then 15 foot. So it went on as the years went by.
Yeah,
we had bigger and bigger combine.
Where are we now? What size are we
up to
now?
30 foot now.
30 feet. Well, how on earth do you get that through all these?
Well, you take the front off the cutting table off and tow it. Well, we don't tow it with a tractor because it makes the whole outfit too long on the road. But we tow the cutting head with a tractor.
Yeah.
And there again, last year we cut over 90 acres in one day. Oof. And
and in the past, doing it by hand.
Oh, you had about 2 acres.
Oh, Lester, the fact that you've seen this change over the years.
Yes.
What I need to know, and that links in with Bill later on in the show, is who services all this? Right, you've got all this different machinery. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to mention some of the machinery that you have?
Yeah, well, we started with a Fergie T20, then we moved up to a 135.
What's that?
That one would have been about 35 to 40 horsepower.
Right.
Massey
Fergie.
Had two or three of them, and we moved on a bit bigger. We had a Nuffield, made in this country. Nuffield, quite a good tractor. But that was up to about 70 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
That one was for pulling. We had a forage harvester then that was pulled by the tractor,
not
a self-propelled today.
Right, so you've got a tractor, forest harvester, what other equipment?
Oh,
bailers?
Oh yeah, bailers. Well, we had two conventional balers.
Yeah.
We hadn't got to round balers by that time. After the Nuffields, we had two Nuffields.
Stars?
That was the time when, before that, previously, the tractors all had no cabs at all.
Right.
No cabs, no roll bars.
Well, health and safety people wouldn't have liked that, would they?
Well, no, there were several accidents,
yeah.
And people got killed, and they insisted that we put roll bars on tractors. And we were one of the first in the area to put a roll bar on. And then it was cabs. Oh, lovely, to get in a cab. Before, we was out in all winds and weathers.
Yeah.
Very healthy.
Yes. And now you've got a cab and you're protected.
Now you've got a
cab
and they also got to have a radio today.
Oh, don't they just? Yes.
And
air conditioning.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. How?
They won't drive them if there's a window broken or anything like that. They've got to have it all done. Then after Nuffields, we had Joneses in Wibbliscombe was selling Steyrs. Not very many people have heard of Steyrs. They're made in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Very good tractors. They were, in fact, I think one of the Steyrs we had, he was about 100 horsepower. We'd creeped up to 100 horsepower by then. They were four-wheel drives, had front-wheel brakes. That's right. The only tractors I've come across with front-wheel brakes. Because Austria is a steep country,
yeah.
And they knew what they were doing when they made them. That 100 horsepower tractor, the Steyr, was...
Right, Lester, can you explain, well, to me and to the listeners, the significance of having front-wheel brakes on steep ground?
Yes, well, if you haven't got front-wheel brakes on steep ground, even though you think you've got big tyres on the back,
yeah.
If it's a little bit dewy or a little bit wet, you're going to go down over there at 100 mile an hour.
Oh, no, that is scary
stuff. But if you've
got...
Yeah. Four-wheel drive, it's not only the pulling, it's being able to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
On steep land. I think that 100 horsepower Steyr we had was, I think, probably the best tractor we ever had. He was low to the ground.
Yeah.
You could drive him anywhere. In fact, I've been going up steep hills with him, and I've been afraid to go any further, but the old tractor was still going on.
Yeah.
He'd still keep going.
You were nervous.
Yes, I had to stop.
Oh, Lester, that's fabulous, because I think, folks, you'll get the impression that farm machinery and some of the work we do is dangerous, lives have been lost, haven't they?
We specialised in doing a lot of steep land work
because
we had the machinery
had
to do it. And we got to know when you could go on steep land and when you couldn't. If it's too wet, you just had to stay off it. Yes. After the Steyrs, Joe just stopped selling them for some reason or another, and then they started selling Sammys, which were made in Italy. A lovely tractor, but a little bit not made quite heavy enough and strong enough. And they were air cooled as well. You didn't have to put water in the radiator.
Oh,
which was a good thing in some respects.
Yeah.
We had trouble with some of them. Back axles broke or something, and they petered out. No more were brought into the country, and by this time we were. We were on to John Deere.
Ah, right. The John Deere.
John Deere's were being sold at Bampton, which only about 10 miles down the road, and they had good. They proved to be very reliable, and also very.
Oh.
They're very reliable, and
right.
We had good service.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
So we stuck with John Deere's.
Yeah.
We still have John Deere's now.
Right, because, folks, you might have come across these tractors on the road. The great big... Are they green?
Yeah, they're green.
Why don't you have red tractors like we have on the farm, the internationals? Because Bill is an international person, aren't you, Bill?
Oh, I am.
Yes.
For my sins.
For your sins, yeah. Right.
We had one international.
Yes, and?
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose they were a little bit further away. Nothing against internationals, except that sometimes when you were whipping round a corner and whipping round the steering wheel, you'd catch your elbow in the armrest on the seat. He'd make you swear.
You didn't think much. Right. Well, Bill can fill us in when you have your story, Bill, later. But I need now to ask you, Lester, about who services all your machinery. Because, well, I mean, Bill helps me with mine.
Yes.
But who? You've got all this.
Yes.
You've got the forest harvesters and the balers and the tractors. Who looks after them for you?
We've got a chap. He's got his own van.
Right. Oh, a man of the van.
He's man of the van. He was John Deere Mechanic of the Year for the whole country.
Wow.
But he wanted more money, and he didn't stick with the... with a big outfit, and he set up on his own, and he services all our machinery. He'll come night or day. He's probably up there mending something now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you were saying he's there at least twice a week.
Oh yes. Yeah. You know. I don't like to see him come, but he does. But
and that's good to know. And then we cannot finish your story, Lester. There's lots you could say, half an hour, it's not enough time, but thank you. But what I need to ask you is, all of the work you've done, all of the contracting and the business and the success that you've had, could you have done it without the help of your wife, Frances?
Of course I couldn't. she was in it right from the start, and... She has done any amount of fetching and carrying, going to fetch spare parts, and things like that. She's helped carrying bales.
Yeah.
When it was small bales, she helped driving tractors.
Yeah.
Done all that, and brought up five children as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got four daughters and one son, and that was marvellous.
Because Austin, now are you semi-retired, or how much work do you do now?
Well, I've cut it down now to 12 hours a day.
Oh, good for you, instead of 24.
I don't have to do as much, but I find I'm on most of the time.
Yeah,
I love it, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't.
Yeah.
My son, he's taken on the contracting, organising most of that, and his son is just leaving school this summer.
That's your grandson.
Yeah. He's driving a truck and trailer today.
Yeah.
He should be in school. Nope. I did not say that.
No, that's what they used to do, didn't they?
He leaves. He's gone 16.
Yeah.
And he loves it, and he's very good. And we've had some very loyal workers. We've been all the time. I got it was Lionel. He'd been with us he's worked for us. He did leave us for a little while because he had a bad back. But apart from that, he's worked for us for over 40 years.
So, with the help of loyal workers and your dear wife, you've managed to run this successful contract, and you've helped lots of people like myself. We farmers could not manage without people like you and your equipment. So thank you.
Yes.
We're going to have a break now, okay? And we'll hear from Bill and more from you later. But thanks, 10 Radio listeners. We're going to go for a break. And when we come back, we'll carry on with this fascinating discussion of machinery. Okay.
Thank you.
Hello again, Bill and Les. We're having a good chat. But Bill Burge is a mechanic. What do you term yourself? Are you a farm mechanic or an independent?
I don't know. Like a bit of a tinker, really,
yes.
I suppose. I don't know.
No?
Travelling...
Man in a van?
Yes. White sort of, van man gone wrong, isn't it?
Anyway, welcome to Farming Life.
Thank you.
As you say, perhaps you could tell us... a bit of your story and how you come to be...
Well, at school, I suppose. Father worked on a farm with all the old sort of stuff about.
Yeah.
Got to be sort of 16, didn't know where I was going. Probably a typical male of the time.
Yeah.
I think it was the farm manager where the father worked found me the job at Gliddon's years ago.
And can you tell the listeners Gliddon's was?
Well, a Massey dealer at the time.
Right.
Didn't know what to expect. Turned up on Monday morning. Fright of your life sort of thing.
Yeah.
Given the brush and told to get on with it sort of thing, you know. Come back when you finished. That would be about, I suppose, my job description on the first day.
Right.
Not having a clue what to do or where to go. Big place. Small boy.
Yeah.
You know, totally lost. And then they found I could write.
Ooh.
So I sent into the office to write bills. Because everything was handwritten then. It wasn't computerized whatever, it was all handwritten. You had to gather up loads of bits of paper and write out the bill. And then I thought this wasn't for me, so I suddenly lost the ability to write. You make a mess of a few and then they threw you out.
Yes, right.
So back out
you
to the brush.
Sabotaged
yeah,
that
back
job
out
then.
To the
yes.
brush again.
Yeah.
That was sort of like the first year, I suppose. Served petrol at the garage, at the forecourt for a while. Because it was all they had one of the, at a garage. Didn't like that much. It was a bit sort of hectic at the time. Couldn't sort of keep up with it. Not really wanting to sort of work a till all day. Back to the tractors again. And so on. I mean, but then you get sent on an apprenticeship scheme sort of thing. Go to college and you learn a bit one day a week for the next 5 years. Picking it up a bit as you go along. You make an awful lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully you're learning from them.
Well, yeah, you get shouted at a lot.
Right.
So, yes, you're learning from that. But you're working on what is now, I would class as very simple stuff.
You compared know, to...
Yes,
to,
I mean, yes. I'm not into the modern stuff that Lester will be driving. Wouldn't know where to start.
With all the electronics?
Electronics, oh, no. Bad word.
Yes.
I wouldn't know where to start on something like that that's gone wrong.
Yeah.
If it's got a mechanical piece on it, yes, okay, I can take that off and beat it and put it back on again with a new bearing or something. That's not a problem. But when it becomes electronic, I never have got my head round it. Find it very difficult.
Yes.
I can sort electrical problems, but electrical and electronic,
no.
totally different. So,
because these modern tractors have cabs that look like cockpits, don't they?
Yes.
Airplanes.
Yes.
And all the unbelievable. Do you find that, Lester?
Oh, it has. Yeah. They are. Yes.
It's quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But back to good old.
Yeah, I find a lot of say about the modern stuff. It looks like it's all made so that you can't work out how it works.
Right.
That's my opinion of it. There's so many pitfalls you could fall into.
But
even getting in the thing.
Yes, but back to the tractor. Say on our farm, you come and you fix something that goes wrong.
Yes.
Now, folks, we had a tractor that was a small.
The International 574, I think it was.
And it can get in our buildings. Some of these big tractors. My brother has a big tractor, and they can't get in the sheds.
That's a very popular problem.
Yes, and the farm gates were designed way back as you know for Lester's time and father's for horses and carts. And these huge tractors can't get down the roads or through the gateways. So fortunately, I've got access on our farm for my brother's huge saying, Lester, this huge combine. Gets across our fields, but it can't get through the windy lane up to Brompton Rolf. And so this is I wanted this small tractor fixed. Something wrong with it. Bill comes along and we pulled apart this engine. And I, as a female driver, a tractor, as long as it went, and didn't matter what it looked like, as long as it went. But what you did, Bill, for that track, well, I am a, well, would you like to explain what
well,
you did?
Well, it's, yeah, it's baffling people with science, isn't it? I don't know, I've taken apart, I don't know how many engines, especially international ones, because I worked on them for, I don't know, probably 25 years more. So I know roughly what I'm doing. You sort of walk up to it and you unbolt the bits of the engine and you put it down in what I would call a relatively tidy order. And whereas the customer has stood there with the mouth hanging open, wondering if it's ever going to go again.
Every bit of this engine was put, we had a yard, an empty yard, and it just went all over the floor, and I have never, how on earth are you going to put this back together again?
Well, it's quite, thought, it's quite yeah. easy, because I've done it before.
Yes.
It's what I do.
yes. yeah.
I mean, I'm currently doing a Deutz clutch. I've never actually done one before, so it's taking a little bit longer, and... Well, I know what I'm doing because a bolt is a bolt is a bolt. It's sort of, you know, they're all the same, really. But, okay, with that, it takes a bit longer. But within international, you just go up to it. You know roughly how long it's going to take. You know every bolt, what it looks like, what size it is, where it goes.
Yeah.
You can chuck it all in a big heap and pick it up and put it back together.
Which is
going back to baffling you with science. And
no, I love... And I have so much respect for the fact that, as you say, you understand all the bits of this... This tractor that I, as I was driving.
I can't
driving
imagine
it.
How many sort of engines I have had apart.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I haven't been counting. I haven't needed to.
No,
but it would be probably hundreds. Because everyone seems to have one of these tractors.
Well, no, we, as you say, we smaller farmers.
Yeah, it's a popular tractor.
What the 574?
Yeah, all that sort of range. Yeah. They're dying out now because the cabs are rusting apart. But. Mechanically, I mean, yeah, no problems at all with any of them. They seem to go on and on. I mean, I suppose you get used to not having a handbrake and things like that.
Yes. But, well, I manage, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've even got one with a handbrake that doesn't work, but I mean, they are fixable, but most people don't seem to bother. But I mean.
But, right, I have to tell you, listeners, I've just said, oh, I manage without a handbrake. Well, oh dear. Instead of the handbrake, I've had what's called a topper on the back of one of my tractors. And a topper is a piece of machinery that has a big blade. It's like a lawnmower, is it? A rotary lawnmower?
I suppose it's an industrial sort of mower, isn't it? Yeah.
So I've got this on the back of my tractor, and I was using it as a brake. If you put the topper down on the ground, it acts like a brake. Well, I had a problem with a split pin that had got loose, and I looked at it and I thought, oh, that's not right, I'll have a look. Put the topper down on the ground and went round and thought, ah, I've got another split pin in the cab, I can put it in and that will do the job. So I lifted the topper to straighten it a bit, thinking I'll get the pin in if the topper's just a bit more straight. Lifted the topper up, and in doing so, effectively removed the brake on the tractor. And this tractor just, it was on a slope, it just took off. Now, folks, I can't replace me, but I can replace the tractor. I let it go. And this tractor and topper just took off down the hill, through a fence, taking the wire of the fence with it. Off it went, trundling down another field, and then it went through another fence and ended up in the river. And oops. So I trudge back to the farmyard and I say, oh dear, I've had a slight problem. I've got a tractor in the river. Oh, help, I need Bill to come and rescue. And you did, didn't you?
I did.
Yes.
Yes, it was quite an experience.
So,
yeah, we went back to my place and took a wheel off my tractor because the wheel on the back of that one was, well,
had been wrecked.
It had a tree poking through.
Yes.
It.
yes.
So put another wheel on it and sort of drove it. I mean, it was already out of the water by that time,
yeah,
but drove it back to the farm. And apart from the loader being twisted, the tractor itself was okay.
Yeah.
Which I suppose goes to show it's a reasonable tractor. The loader was a write-off, but we got another one and put on it, so that's okay. But yeah, so that was a very interesting experience.
Yes, and of course I've never lived it down, folks, and it's quite, you know, women drivers and tractors. But that's an example of how Bill has helped me on my farm with the machinery, and I couldn't do it without you. And thanks.
Well, there are lots of things that are sort of doable, isn't it? It's all easily done, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because you're a very practical person.
Yeah,
and
you just look at it and you know it needs one of those.
Right.
So you go and do it. It's sort of done.
So I can't tell one bolt from, you know, you give me instructions to get a certain kind of bolt.
Yes.
And I need to have the measurements, and I don't really know what I'm doing, but if you tell me, I can go and get the parts that are necessary.
Yeah, well, it's just the experience. It's all down to, I mean, you know what you know, and I know what I know.
Yeah.
And if everyone knew everything, none of us would have a job, is it, would we?
This is true.
That's the middle and both ends of it.
Yes. So do you have many, we were talking and you said, are there many women farmers that are involved with machinery?
Not as many as you might think, perhaps. Not, I haven't got that many customers. Well, you would be one.
Yeah.
There's one or two others, but that's really about it. There's farmers' wives who drive machinery.
Yes, like
but that's less a slightly
with,
different...
Yes.
From me, they're actually, not actually the farmer as such.
No, I'm quite in a...
They're the person that gets called out when all else fails, sort of thing. Sort
yes,
of thing.
Yes.
But no, only one or two female customers as such.
Yeah, no, I said I'm the one that wrecks the tractor and I'm the one that has to get you into...
Good for business.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, folks, have we got time... Should we have another quick break, Julian? And then when we come back, folks, we'll look at... tractors on roads, because I think that's quite an interesting topic. Ooh. Okay?
You noble diggers all stand up now, stand up now. You noble diggers all stand up now. The wasteland to maintain, sing cavaliers by name. Your digging does maintain and persons all defame. Stand up now, stand up for their lord, to keep poor men in awe, that their vision saw, to bind us to their law. Stand up now, diggers all.
Right, well done. Thank you, Bill and Lester. During that break, you were chatting about how you service your customers. We looked at the rota problem of how you how you silage, which farm when, and you were saying you can start off in Tonevale and end up at Brendon, and the nature of the farm and the climate will naturally help your rota take place. But the question you two were talking about was, how do you prioritise a customer? If, but say, two people have got a problem, how do you decide which one to go to first? And Lester, you said that really you have to look after the little people.
Well, yes.
Yeah?
Yes, you do. But we have a rota with our silage makers where we know who starts and who comes next. A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't put those in the order of C, B, A without their permission.
Right, right.
We like to keep them involved and keep them all happy. It is a problem sometimes, but we usually overcome it. Earlier on, I was going to mention that Austin's wife does all the bookwork.
Uh-huh,
now,
right.
There's a lot of paperwork these days with the contracting, and she's got a computer, and she does that.
Yes.
And I was going to also mention earlier that some of the couple of workers that work for us, and others work for us for 25 years, Chris, he can do anything, and I've got another, Graham, he can do anything as well, and he's been with us for 20 years. And we still get people ringing us up wanting to come and drive for us. No problem about drivers.
Yes. Oh, that's yeah. Thank
and,
you. That's encouraging.
Another thing we were talking about on the roads, our tractors on the roads. All our drivers are instructed, if there's traffic behind them, to pull in and let, if there's a passing place, to let the general public pass. And I think that's essential.
That's the general rule.
Yes.
Because, folks, I was going to say, is there anyone out there who's been stuck behind a tractor and equipment and been in a long queue? And I think probably there are quite a few of you who can say yes to that. And I wanted to take this opportunity to let Lester and Bill, people who drive tractors on the road, to put their point of view, because yes, the driver of the tractor is supposed to pull in when they can to let anything behind pass. But over to you two, you've got a point of view where, Bill, you were saying.
Yes, well, I'm not actually a tractor driver on the road sort of for a job, but I do occasionally. Every now and again, you're driving along and you look behind and there's sort of 10 cars or something, you pull in. But you get the impression that you get blasted at with a horn because you were there.
Yeah. What are you doing on the road at all?
Yeah,
sort of thing.
That's for one aspect of it. But I have also pulled in to let people pass, and the car's pulled in behind me. So, I mean, I don't know where we go with that one. So, I mean, yes, but it'd be common politeness, really, to pull in. I mean, I suspect there's probably an amount of cars that you can legally gather behind you, but I don't know what it is. But as I said, I don't do that for a living, I don't really need to know. But
what was that you said? You stopped at some lights.
I have driven a tractor with a plough on before now, a raised plough, and I did stop it. Actually, it was at a roundabout going towards Taunton. And I looked behind and the car was actually more or less under the plough, which I thought was, they couldn't have been looking where they were going, really.
You
need to wake up a little bit somewhere.
Right, and you, Lester, you were saying that Austin got pulled over by the police?
Yes, he has been pulled in with, when he's had a combine, which is a bit slower very often than a tractor. He's been pulled in by the police because there's traffic behind. But if there's not a lay-by, you can't pull in very well, and there's long stretches of roads without lay-bys. But very often you slow down a bit and think the traffic will overtake, but they don't.
Why not?
I don't know. I rather think it's women drivers, but I shouldn't say that.
No, you do, because this has to be.
They don't know their acceleration.
Ah, right.
And they won't pull out and pass when they could. And it does annoy us sometimes.
Yeah, so you've slowed down,
yes.
And you can see, because you're in a high vehicle, you can see that
the
way is clear, and the person behind.
Yeah.
Do you think sometimes they're too close and they can't see?
I think they are sometimes,
yeah.
And they won't get out into the road to see if the road is clear.
Right.
And if you put your winker going, to tell them that you're slowing down, they still won't overtake.
Right.
Yeah.
So, folks, especially ladies, if you're behind a vehicle on the road and the vehicle pulls in, that is probably means the road ahead is clear.
Yes.
Put your foot down, go for it,
yes.
Girl, because you can zip past it and get on, and then we won't have such a queue.
That's true. Sometimes a driver from two or three or four or five back will come out and pass.
Right, because they can see that
they
it's
can
clear.
See the road is clear.
Then number one will think, it's okay to go. And before you know it, you've got a potential
accident
spot.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm. So it isn't just, the point I'm making, folks, it isn't just the responsibility of the tractor driver or equipment driver. You know, if we're all, you know, it's our roads, and we have to take, those of us behind machinery have to take some responsibility for getting past it and keeping the queue long if we don't do anything.
Yeah. Yes, quite.
Well done.
It is a problem, but we, as I say, all our drivers are instructed to pull in whenever they can to let traffic by.
So I've got 2 minutes left, Julian tells me, and I just wanted to ask Bill how you cope with attending your customers, because you're on a much more individual basis. Who's first? Right, I phone up with a problem, and then Mr. Bloggs phones up with a problem. How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, a certain aspect is how many tractors do you have on the farm?
Right.
If you have two or three that can all do the same job, well, you just hop on the other one for today.
Right.
If I'm busy.
Yes.
And I'll be there as soon as I can. So if I'm in the middle of doing a clutch or something, I can't just drop it and go.
Yeah.
If you have only one tractor, I will do my best to sort of make an excuse and disappear from what I'm doing, because they've probably got three or four tractors already. Yeah. So... it's a continuous juggle, my life.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't know if I'm coming or going. I mean, you know, you don't know. So that's how it goes.
But
nothing more than that about it, really.
You
will know that I will turn up.
Yes, I do.
But it might not be until tomorrow.
No, but I know.
That's the other aspect of it.
And that is what makes you so essential to my farming life. And both of you, I think, thank you. You've given the listeners an idea of just how important farming life machinery. It can be dangerous, but it's vital, and you look after it. And thank you both for coming in and telling us your stories. And now it's, next month it'll be... probably wool, because it's shearing time in June, so I might get a program together about wool. Okay? Thank you.